Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear, listen here, I'm afraid.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, with a fanfic with fanfic, that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I do believe that you mean Viceroy Weirdington Esquire. Oh, you anarchist and your constant failure to respect proper title.
It's kind of suck to edit. Yes, I forgot that you were doing this. Hey, folks, we're back again. This special...
Boy, are we. I hope you enjoyed your Christmas break, because the darkness returns.
Yeah.
We have come back to carry on our dark works.
Unfortunately, despite everything, we're still here. I think both of us are somewhere around sick at the moment. So you're just going to have to bear with this, especially me. We're almost into the next year. We're plodding along into book four. The Road to Thunderhead, I think is what I'm calling it. The Road to Thunderhead 2020.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've had an entire Yule break. I am refreshed, I'm pugnacious, my loins are regirded. I've picked up my heroic girdle and I've restringed it, polished the leather, and it's back on my loins. It's girding them fierce. I'm ready. I'm gonna roll with the punches and give them back. Like, we're gonna plotting by Jove. We'll destroy it. We march heroically into oblivion. The Stygian depths ain't got nothing on us.
Speaking of marching into the oblivion, last book, Blackjack died again.
Super died, ultra died, a death of the soul, her very essence sundered.
That's what happens when you roll high too high on the crit tables. Your soul explodes.
How the fuck do we open if we don't have a narrator?
we open once again in the orb void, the the Kirby-esque space on which Blackjack was last time.
Oh, she's connected to the Wi-Fi, so she's cloud enabled. I take it.
Nah, she's just floating through the orb void. We get a lot of, like, similar descriptions. We
return to orb space. All right.
We're given a lot of similar descriptions the last time we were here. But this time, we're given a little bit different because Blackjack can, like stares down at, like, a dark mirror of the city of Hoofington and, like, can see, like, a swirling maelstrom of small glittering lights that are slowly being pulled into a center. That's residing in the core of the hoof, of which Blackjack's like, huh, that's a little weird. And then, like, the ghost of Snips, the, like, necromancer, like, just shows up and, like, starts talking about, like, the metaphysics of what's going on, for a little while.
This is the first time I've ever been interested. Please fucking explain.
What's going on? So he's just like, yeah, it's heck of a spell. He explains like what actually happened to Blackjack is that, like, her soul just basically just, like, ejected like a catapult out of her body, and where we are now is some weird, like, something's happening in the general space, because, like, when people die in this setting, it's established in this conversation, their souls just, like, float off into space. and then space is where like the other side is or whatever.
Ooh, yeah, sky's the limit and space is the place. Is that the case?
I see.
Would you like some creamer?
Yes. Thank you, Macho Man.
Oh, yeah.
But they...
I'm here for all my macho maniacs.
But something's going wrong in the hoof.
And I'm not going to explain this joke. You look it up yourself, macho maniac.
Oh, man. You can tell it's been a while since I've done one of these. He explains, like, something's going wrong with the hoof specifically, and that, like, instead of, like, floating off into space like good souls normally go, the topography, like, the astral topography of the environment is like a giant net that's, like, slowly, like, sifting all of the souls closer into the center. Like, they discuss, like, oh, is the hoof consuming them? And it's like, no, it just seems to be, like, piling them in, like, a nest, and they don't, like, he can't really cotton on why that's happening. And then he does one of those things where it's like, well, I'd like to talk to you about this more, but you've got, like, living to do, and I've got dying to do, and he just sort of, like, fades off as a good ghost does. Ethereal lacuna, as far as I understand, basically, like, appears out of nowhere and, like, hoists her back into the living world.
Okay, so... there was minimal danger the entire time. It was just like a forced astral projection.
Well, no, she is dead.
It could be navigated, like, back from it. Okay.
No, she did die again. We get this explained in a hot second after Blackjack wakes up. Like, Blackjack wakes up and finds out that, like, through the combination of Lacuna and Snails, who is the other necromancer, they, like, basically, like, snagged her soul back and anchored it back to her body using dark magic. And it describes, like, the awful, like, inexplicable, like, ugliness of the experience for Blackjack. And it's just another, like, way that she's been wrong. She's now been soul violated. Like, it honestly uses, like, terminology that implies, like, some sort of, like, violation of herself again. Because I guess we needed more of that.
Okay. So, add zombie to cyborg?
Yes. She is now a Shadowrun-style cyber zombie. Her.
All right.
So when you kept saying
so whatever living tissue she has left is now lich tissue mortified. Okay.
Yeah, she has the same thing going on as the necromancer boys got, but they don't have the same like eye thing that's going on. Oh man, I just clued in onto that. Sorry. There's like there's a thing that they mention a bunch of times that like necromancy makes your eyes funny, and that's probably what happened to Big Daddy early on because he has special eyes as well. I don't even think of that, but yeah, she would have special eyes, but since she has robo eyes, that effect is fine. So nothing physically has changed about her in any way, but you can rest assured she has now died twice and is now a zombie, effectively.
Okay, so nothing is, so they don't even acknowledge that, like, okay, all of your meat is officially completely vestigial.
Well, that's the thing, though, is, like, as far as I can understand from the way that this process works, it isn't. Like, there's still a physical, like, the lich, the, like, it's not so much, like, they're not, like, necrotizing. Like, the flesh isn't, like, rotting or anything. They're just, like, a normal living person, except they're, like... weird, their soul is anchored to their body rather than being like a normal alive person. So nothing has changed about Blackjack. She's the same amount of meat, and it's the meat is exactly the same as it's always been. It continues to be. It's just that now she effectively just lives forever, which is something that was already maybe established by her cybernetics anyways. So she lives for double forever.
I'm so frustrated is too strong a word. I'm
annoyed?
Mad bored. Like it's like a an emotional, dull, persistent pain. Like,
yeah,
I am angry in a like blasé, like bored kind of way. Because like this story is so dark and edgy and like serious. And for matures, But it only expresses that in, like, gore, and then they were, like, raped, and, like, isn't that, like, mature and bad? And someone said the naughty word and did a drugs, when, like, I'm sitting here, like, oh, darkness. Well, how about, oh, great, you go through this process, and you're now a ghost inhabiting your meat, and you now have to suffer an eternal purgatory between living and dead, that you can no longer eat. Your meat has been sort of like flash mummified. It looks fine, but it's dead. You will no longer generate new cells. They'll just recuperate themselves through dark magic anytime they're injured. You now get to live the rest of your days in an unwholesome stasis. How about that for dark? But that would be, like, way too much, like, way too existentially painful for an author like this.
Yeah.
To be able to comprehend or, like, want that in their grim fantasy. Their like, murderous, rape-tastic power fantasy.
Well, it's also at odds with her, like, them wanting BJ to still be able to do all the things she normally does. Like, there's a token effort given to the idea that, like, maybe this cybernetic stuff sucks in a way that, like, she's not prepared for, when it establishes that she no longer really needs to sleep anymore, and she could just kind of keep going effectively forever, and the rest of her crew can't, since they all have, like, normal mortal bodies outside of Rampage, and that forces her to make a lot of, like, hard, like, choices about how she operates from day to day. If she wants to continue doing her hero shtick, she has no excuse to stop from fatigue, but the rest of her crew does, obviously. And that could be a lot more tension-driven, but it's kind of just established as an idea. And like everything else in the story, Somber is incredibly bad at committing to that kind of concept. So it gets solved within its own
chapter. There's also that he seems to have already forgotten at this point that, like, a long time ago, early in book two, and, like, even I forgot it because it stopped coming up, that if she doesn't force herself into a REM state some way, somehow, she's gonna, like, suffer from a psychotic break. But we seem to have just forgotten that concept.
Well, she solved that as well.
It wasn't interesting.
She figured out how to sleep, and she just doesn't, like, she doesn't need to sleep, but she can just do it whenever she wants to now. Like, all of those problems have been solved by this point. Like, she has, like, that's it. Like, we are in late stage, like, Project Horizons where nothing is real and the points don't matter. Where, like, it's like, okay, all of the interesting ideas you could bring up with this character have all been solved. So, like, how is the story still going on? And the answer is, like, because we haven't done anything yet. Like, none of the character development is, like, parallel to the events of the story happening. So, like, Blackjack, like, solves her having all sorts of weird man-related trauma, and solves all those problems with her sleep schedule, and solves all the problems with her being a cyborg within chapters, but it takes dozens of chapters before they actually get to a new plot point. At the same time, like, Somber is just so bad at writing, like, simultaneous stories. Like, it has to pause to do one or the other, which is why, like, it's why this story is 1.5 million words. Isn't because it's, like, because of its depth, but because, like, it has to stop and do a whole chapter to talk about the problems that were arisen in the last chapter, and then solve them, and move on to the next one. Anyways, we're, like, 4 seconds into this chapter.
Let's get back on the road.
The
road to literally nowhere.
The road to nowhere. Well, eventually we'll reach the
At least cliffs. Oblivion is a destination. Like, we're like... yeah, okay. Yeah, back on the purgatory road.
Yep. It's the long road. BJ has a... Like, they mentioned about the, like, kid that BJ almost beat to death again. And BJ wants to, like, chalk to that child. And that's a thing. There's another, like, instance of Somber, like, wildly annihilating the goddess's character and making her seem super lame for, like, no good reason. There's a sequence where like Snails and Silver Spoon, who's the ghoul, are having a conversation because they knew each other in the past, and like they mention about Trixie, who's one of the like dominant personalities within the goddess, which like. So, like, I keep bringing this up every single time, but it's because it befuddles me how, like, wildly mischaracterized the goddess is in the story. Because, like, in the original story, the, like, separation between different dominant personalities is never really established, and it's kind of implied to be that, like, they're a sort of amalgam. But in this, it just establishes, no, they're distinct entities that argue with each other all the time. And I don't understand why that is, maybe just to make, like, the goddess seem more, like dumb. Like, the story really has a hate-on for the goddess just in general, so it seems like a lot of the decisions are made to just make the character seem stupider and lamer.
Is Wom.
Yes.
Is powerful Wom unacceptable?
Yes, unacceptable.
I mean, we had to have Golden Blood around to, like, completely remove all relevance and agency from the main six.
I mean, clearly. There's also a very bizarre thing, too, with the way he characterizes it, that, like, Trixie's the dominant personality because she has the most forceful personality of the four that are the dominant minds. So she has control most of the time, is kind of the way it's established. But they present, like, this story presents Twilight Sparkle as being the voice of reason. It's important to remember that the Twilight Sparkle that exists in this story is a war criminal comparable to, like, literally a Nazi scientist. Who invented, like, horrible bio-nightmares and did a whole bunch of other horrible shit. So the fact that she's kind of the voice of reason is preposterous, just to keep in mind. Like, every single time this comes up, it always, like, sits kind of funny with me. It's like, okay, if this was the character from the show, I could understand this, because Twilight Sparkle's whole thing is about, you know, friends and shit, but this is based off the fanfic, and in the fanfic, Twilight Sparkle's a Nazi, so it doesn't really work.
Sort of Project Paperclip hours, kind of.
Yeah, she's an Oppenheimer. BJ then has a long chat with Stygius, who I forgot to include within all the chaos of the last chapter, that like Stygius and Psychoshy kind of become an item. They pull this weird.
No, I remember that quite distinctly.
Sorry,
you brought that up at toward the tail, like you made sure to get that in.
Oh well, then.
Oh, just by the way.
Well, then it was such an inconsequential detail that even I forgot that I brought it up. But yeah, they do this weird mom routine where they're like trying to get like they're like pressuring him to like treat Psychoshy right and all that shit. I think it's meant to be a moment of comedy, but it just kind of comes across as really weird because it's like. The relationship these characters have is super weird, since, like, you know, Blackjack and Stygius had a one-night stand, and then he decided to follow her around for a while because he was, like love-struck with her, and then he fell in love with Psychoshy instead, and it's just, like, it's a hairier situation that could be further elaborated on in, like, a rom-com fic, and it just feels super out of place here. A lot of this is just Blackjack, like, so, like, this chapter primarily is Blackjack, like, losing all the excess baggage he's accumulated over the last couple of chapters, which is why all this stuff is being settled. Like, it's like, okay, we have the open threat of Stygius. Okay, Stygius is now has a thing for Psychoshy, so we don't have to worry about him. Next, we go to Xanthei, and, like, no, excuse me, Blackjack has a, like, Blackjack is, like, finally, like, okay, the memories I keep seeing have to be some sort of cybernetic bug, because she didn't start getting these memory like hallucinations until after she started becoming a robot. So she finally puts two to two together, and she's like, okay, Xanthei is a mechanic. She's like a weird like technician. She might be able to fix me.
I'm gonna be so mad if that is correct. And also, I'm already real mad because like you've been to the orb space. You already know that you're connected directly to the orb force and the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some
like the goddess Wi-Fi and the orbs force.
Yes,
are both things that you're already one with.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some pun of Purga Orbity. I don't know. But yeah, she
orbitory.
Yes, she's in the orbitory. But yeah, she goes in and like
Porga Orby?
Porga Dorby.
No.
Porg. But she goes to Xanthe and they have a conversation that's like really dumb and like very, very politically inept. They discuss about the past and about how like if like having to seen all the shit that like that Equestria did to win the war, I would have wanted the zebras to nuke us as well. Which is like fucking absolute devastatingly dumb take. Because you know what nuclear war kills a whole lot of? A lot of unrelated civilians, you dumbass. They have a conversation about it and whatever. Xanthe is unsure of what to do because she doesn't want it. Like, BJ, like, offers her to join the crew, and Xanthe's like, nah, that's not for me. You get into way too much danger for me to, like, want to hang around with you. But yeah, they dig in BJ's memories, and they do in fact detect that she's got some sort of, like, yeah, she's also getting cyber memories, and also she has like recording and listening devices in her brain that have been like recording and sending information somewhere of everything she sees and does for some reason.
I mean, she was put together by the war crimes gang.
Yes,
she was. This was all like the $1 million to make her the $1 million mare was supplied by Horace Bronson, a trustworthy figure in his own right, and the primary technical work was done by Zordon, whose machinations caused everything bad in her life up to this point.
Yes.
So, gosh, she was betrayed by those upstanding?
Yes. Can't imagine why. There's also, like, a weird, like, there also establishes a weird thing that, like, I think, like, doesn't really add anything one way or the other, but it feels like it's just to answer a nitpick, which is, oh, also, those listening and recording devices cannot be removed, because it'll make her blind and deaf if she does so. They're just hardwired into her cybernetics and cannot be removed. Which doesn't really add anything to the whole concept because it's like, well, if someone's recording, like they already probably have whatever they need if they're recording you. So it doesn't really matter. But also, like, it just feels like a weird nitpick. Like, it's trying to retroactively answer, like, someone asking, well, why don't they just remove them now? And it's like, I don't know, it just doesn't really add anything to the story either way. Yeah. They also established that, Blackjack's legs are super busted. Like, her front legs are basically completely mangled. One of them's broken, and the other one kind of, like, is just kind of, like, hanging on a hinge. So that means that there's no fights in this chapter. Yay! We don't have to deal with fucking gratuitous combat storytelling. We learn a little bit...
Wait, if...
Yes.
How much of her is supposed to be the soul jar? Did they, like, soul jar, like, a specific part of her cybernetic frame? Or is she now, like, baked in indestructibly and permanently with broken forelegs?
Her soul has been put back into her meat body, which isn't the same as her robo-part body. Because you remember, this story establishes really, really strongly that cybernetics are not part of you, because this is Shadowrun. Cybernetics are a direct loss of essence, so the only parts of her that are really her are the meat parts, which are...
But it doesn't matter, because this is they establish ahead of time that this like, dark black magic technique is fundamentally soul jar technology. Like, you just need an object. But I guess...
She's
like,
been soul... All right, she's soul jarred her own meat. That's what's happening.
All right.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to understand from, like, a second-hand retelling of it, especially because, like, neither of us really care that much because, like, the...
Yeah, it's a pointless question anyway. I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm sort of making fun of it just by asking the question.
Well, I think it's helping our audience try to understand it if they're maybe, like, not clued in super well, but it's a detail that, like soul jar stuff is from the original story, but it's not used this way. And this is just an extrapolation of it. But, like, it doesn't really serve anything. It's like, yeah, Blackjack is even more indestructible, I guess. Like, I guess she can't die unless she's, like, hit by a nuke, and that would be the only thing that could maybe kill her. And it's like, okay.
Or, I guess, set on nuclear fire, like that one other indestructible lich.
Yes, I guess. Yeah, unless you get super exploded, there's really no way of killing her, I guess, which is like, yeah, right, sure. I mean, she's already she's already a max level main character who's half robot. Like,
fewer consequences than ever.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, we also learn that the Legate's plan, like the Legate who is the leader of the like Zebra Remnant's plan, is they're trying to like get a nuke because like the there's a bunch of like unfired Zebra nukes. They're trying to take a nuclear warhead and basically just like throw it into the core of the city. And blow up the core, which I mean, like, is presented as an evil thing because it's like, well, we'll kill a bunch of people, but everyone in the core, like, everyone in the hoop is evil anyways, so, like, what if you're really that bad?
Yeah. Also, no one lives in the, like, the core is an absolute no man's land that is such a certain death, like, that is such a sentence of certain death. People go to commit suicide by walking there.
Yes.
Like, if you detonate the core, I don't know who is lost, except some, like, treasure hunters on the periphery. And most of those are part of a lunatic cult who have replaced our go-to putty patrollers. Like, you kill no one but bad people.
But
you kill between no one and bad people.
Like, it's a hero.
With a few suicide pilgrims on the side. Who are going there to die in the first place?
God, what a mess. What an absolute mess this chapter is. What a mess this story is. We fucking...
Okay, but let's stop... Let's stop the... It's been... It's plot o'clock, and we've been told that this person is bad and doing a bad, and so we must oblige Somber in pretending this is the case. This is Calvin has set a new rule at Calvin Ball, and we must oblige.
Yeah, we're also running out of bad guys, so we need new bad guys to be bad guys.
Because as said in the recap episode, like Somber like bunted the pass like from Sanguine. There was, like, plenty of tools available to him to, like, make a smooth transition from Sanguine on to the next thing, to the next, like, problem, to the next baddie, but he, like, farted and fumbled, and now we're here.
Yeah. It'll take us an entire book before we get to the next major antagonist that isn't from the original story, because like I'm not joking about the Road to Thunderhead thing. The entirety of book 4 is getting to Thunderhead and then solving Thunderhead. So it's all Enclave. This book is all the setup to Enclave, and it's fucking awful. I hate, like, Thunderhead is maybe one of the worst arcs of this. Like, not to hype up too much. Like, Thunderhead might be the worst singular arc.
Well then, let's get to it. What happens next?
Yeah, we gotta mosey. We get the super boring murder plot that was so inconsequential that I didn't even really bother to include it. Where there was like that ghoul that got killed a couple chapters ago, and it was like it kind of implied it was gonna be pinned on Blackjack, and then everyone just like took one look at her, like looked at her player tag and realized she was the main character, and therefore she couldn't be the bad guy. It's this incredibly boring thing where like the like owner of the seedy bar in town is some sort of like weird kingpin, and he was like working with zebras who have been hiding out and staking out this place for a while now, and they all got mysteriously killed, and it's just a really boring plot line where they solve this whole thing by getting a confession out of him. There's one kind of fun thing where like she goes to menace him with her blackjacketness, and he like hits a button and like all of the tables have mines under them because he was like prepared for her to try to like attack him. But then she just gets the entire thing on a wire, like on a recording, and it just broadcasts to everybody, and he gets fingered as the bad guy, and then he gets like banished from the town. And the only reason why this plotline even matters at all is because his his second in command was a griffin. It was that griffin that went with them. And he obeys a contract, and they buy his contract. And in a moment that's supposed to seem satisfying, the guy, like the griffin, is like, "Okay, cool, you finally have my contract. All right, I then shoot my old boss to death because I hated that guy. Fuck that guy." And I could get into the whole fucking politics of griffin contracts, but it's not worth talking about in this story.
Just like it's not worth talking about the fact that I thought Meat Locker, like, boiled to death in the fallout from that building melting.
No, that just didn't happen.
Cool.
Yeah. Like, you said it before, there's even less consequences than there was before. I guess the nuke just didn't go off. It just, like, didn't, as far as I can understand. Like, I don't even really want to go back and double check, but, like, the nuke just...
That's amazing. That's amazing. We had two ticking clocks that, like, were duds.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Way to subvert our expectations.
Like I say, Sombra finds new and exciting ways to let you down. But yeah, they it's all just a really contrived plot to get the...
Bored mad. There's gotta be a, like, is this a unique oeuvre of Sombra as an author? Like, should we pat him on the back for inventing a new experiential field in art? I'm mad that I am bored.
Yeah.
I'm bored that I'm mad.
I'm just gonna call it exhausted, because it's definitely the feeling I have once we get to, like, book five. The feeling you're experiencing right now is the experience I definitely had going through book five. And I'd just be like, every time a new plot detail would happen, I'd be like, oh yeah, sure. Like, that's annoying, but, like, who cares anymore? Like, who cares? Whatever. She gets a new special thing. Everyone dies. Rocks fall. Who cares? I'm just here to get to the end.
Alright, so mystery solved.
It was the butler.
I'm sure it's great for Blackjack and her, like, zombie cyborg UI, like a little, like, Chivo flag, like, appears in her peripheral vision. But for
for us, we just don't care. But she, it's all to just get that griffin on her side, and she gets his contract. But before we can deal with that whole thing, BJ decides to, like, go and talk to Boing, who's the child that she, like, beat to death almost, to like, apologize to him. And it's just the worst. It's the fucking worst interaction in the entire story. I should have, like, queued it up, because it's so fucking bad. It's another one of those things where, like, the story blithely just saying the theme and ethos of the story rather than conveying it through tone. And it just having the worst take on, like, everything, which is a consistent problem.
Oh, God. So if I've been following correctly, that means the conversation is like, hey, sorry for beating you nearly to death for a little apparent reason, kid. That's all right. I know that you're good at heart. Even though you have traumatized me and in all ways behaved like a monster... I know that you are a good person. You meant well by the crimes that you did to me, and therefore you are absolved.
It's actually the opposite problem. Like, one, it's the other moral the story has, which is, like, fuck you for trying to be a hero, basically. Fuck, I can't even, like, bother trying. Like, I've got to cute it up, but, like, I can't even, like. It just. It's.
Oh, it's that one. We're back to it's your fault for meddling in people's lives.
Yeah.
And trying to make a better world. Only fools and degenerates try and do that. Everything is like, no matter how bad it looks, it's better off this way. The status quo is God. And you are interfering in God's domain by listening to your moral conscience. Great.
Yeah, like I'm skimming it. It's not. It's too much to really be worth repeating. But it's basically like, I had a whole bunch of stuff bad happen to me before you got to me, and you almost killed me. So who cares? And, like, the big problem is you're trying to be a hero about this whole thing, and you're trying to, like, ask for forgiveness, and I don't want to give you forgiveness, because giving you forgiveness would mean having to, like, give forgiveness to all the other people who did horrible things to me, up to you, which is wrong and stupid, but whatever, she's a fucking child.
Wow.
And, like, also, and also, it's like, the only thing you could do for me is kill me, because, like, that way I wouldn't have to suffer anymore. This is a fucking child, by the way. Like, this is the worst. Like, I hate that Somber does this all the time. Like, there are no children who are not jaded in the story, because they're all Crusaders. And the worst thing about the Crusaders is a huge tone problem. They're established as being, like, you know, apocalypse children, scavenger kids, or, like, the army of homeless children from any given Sherlock's, like Sherlock Holmes book. So they're all, like, you know, oh, you know, like, we're all chimney sweeps, but we're all, like, thieves and kind of, like, friendly. Oh, fuck the Roma. Oh, I hate that. Anyways.
It also just occurred to me that, like, I reflexively, like, I now burned into my soul, burned into the core of my being is the two core moral message of this story. And they're both horrifying. They're both, like, one is, like, the centrist mantra, better things aren't possible, and you can only cause harm by trying to fix them. And the other is a sort of Calvinist, like, no, God has decided who is good and who is bad, and no amount of bad action will change your core designation as a good person.
Okay, so I found the actual quote I was, like, specifically looking for, which is this idiot child talking. It's after Blackjack just apologized again for the, like, the millionth time, and she says, "And that's why you're stupid," the filly countered. "Think my daddy was sorry, or my mama, or them raiders, them ghouls? Was the Rathog sorry, or the radiation?" She gave a little snort and closed her eyes. "Not a one of them was sorry, so why are you coming to me here asking me to forgive you? What's the point of that?" Blackjack responds, because I'm sorry. What I did was wrong, and I shouldn't have done it," I said as I sniffed. "I was trying to be a good pony, and I'm trying to do better." "And that's where you've done fucked up. There's no such thing as good ponies. Not a one in the world. I ain't a good pony, you ain't neither. We're all just ponies." That is the worst. That is the worst. It's, come on, man. There aren't good people or bad people. We're all just people. But, like, said to, like, a sneering 10-year-old. It's the fucking worst. It's the story has two themes. It's Blackjack is the savior of the West, of the Waste. Like, she's, regardless of the story's intent of trying to establish her as being, like, a dark and conflicted and mysterious, like, bipolar character, Blackjack is just the Messiah, but the story is also establishing, but also Messiahs suck and you shouldn't believe in them. But, like, they're wrong because we're proven categorically that even when she does bad things, it doesn't matter because most people will forgive her anyways, and people who don't forgive her don't matter. Like, we basically never see this child again. Like, they're just here to dump on her and establish the theme that, like, heroes shouldn't be worshipped, but the story runs so contrary to that concept. Like, yeah, heroes should be worshipped, but also here's a hero who you should worship because she's the coolest. Like, here's our rad cyborg ninja zombie who's here to save you from the wasteland, and she is that cool, but also don't believe in her because heroes don't matter. You know, it's very conflicted. It's there is an attempt at having theme here, but neither of the themes matter because they're such at odds with each other.
I'm just thinking, like, I think that there is an intersection between them, that the story has a foundational nihilism that, like, nothing can ever get better.
Mm-hmm.
And any attempt to make it better will foster resentment. And also a, like, Randian idealism of, like, history is made by singular aristos, singular elites.
Mm-hmm.
And their nature is immutable. Regardless of their actions, I'm I don't know. I'm reminded of, I guess, a minor plug. If you're a contributor to the Chapo Trap House, they recently did their holiday special wherein they reviewed Cobra, a Stallone vehicle, wherein he plays a murderous cop, and they describe it as sort of an ode to fascism. And one of the things about fascism is that the less sense it makes, the better. It doesn't give a shit about making sense. It's all appearance. It's all aesthetic. And, like, there are recurring themes, but those themes don't have to mesh. They don't want to. They don't need to. It's better that they don't. There's in a twisted way, no contradiction between... what's important is that there are important people... And that those people are literally incapable of doing wrong. No matter how much wrong they do, it has no impact on their immutable inner nature as everyone's superior and the ones who should lead. And also, everything is awful forever, and there is nothing a hero can or should do about it. So it doesn't matter that these two things are contrary, and that, like, well, if there are no heroes who can do anything, then what do we care about these Ubermensch who are supposed to be our heroes and divinely appointed leaders? It doesn't matter.
Nothing matters.
They are the heroes. It is their responsibility to rule over the world, and the world can never get any better.
Yeah, it's a morally blighted wasteland where the hero is. Like, the hero is essentially, like, exists in an apathetic, morally, like blasted hell zone. But, like, we're still supposed to also root for them, even though every aspect of the story, like, everything about the setting is contrary to their actions. We're still supposed to root for them because they're doing all this hero stuff. God, I hate fucking... This was in the, like, I was recently re-listening to our early episodes just to get a feel of, like, kind of stuff we were talking about then. And I hate that, like, we are, what, 44 episodes in, 49 chapters in, and the fucking themes established in the beginning of, like, everything sucks and nothing gets better. You shouldn't try. You should just lay down on the ground and let the rats eat you. Because believing or hoping in anything doesn't matter. Is still at odds with its core theme of Blackjack trying to do better at the same time. Like, in the first chapter, or sorry, the second chapter, within, like, 10 minutes of each other's events, we are given a scene in which Scoodle, who is a character who is a nihilistic child who doesn't believe in anything, is violently ripped apart by the main character not listening to her sage wisdom. But we are then immediately treated to the contrary theme of you need to do better, knowing that no matter what you do, nothing will ever make it okay. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe, like, because the actual overarching theme of the story is trying to do better in a world that doesn't want you to, which is fucking disturbed. Like, there's a in Thunderhead, we're going to have to have a long talk about how this author has truly, truly toxic ideas about how self-destruction works, but we'll just have to get there.
All right.
So what is
the next event that occurs to us?
All that moralizing. What is the next thing? So you want all that moralizing and theming and talking about that? Throw that in a box. Don't talk about it for another couple of months. Right now, Psycho Shy and Stygies are fucking in a coat room. So that happens, and because Blackjack. So this is another instance where Blackjack. I like the idea. Like, this is another one of those shining moments of the Blackjack I wish I knew, like, wish was here, where she's kind of like, because she's, you know, from a stable was really promiscuous and polyamorous and whatever. She's very, like, blithe about just seeing a pair of people fuck in a coat room, and she just, like, knowingly whispers to Psycho Shy about, like, sex tips, which goes against, like, Blackjack's earlier established character of being, like, ultra-virginal, but this version of Blackjack is still fun to me, of just, like, oh, yeah, there's a pair of fucking in the coat room. Yeah, it's not like I haven't seen that, like, every day of my life. And giving, like, giving coaching tips just is very funny to me. That happens to... It only really happens there to consummate the idea that these two are now in a relationship because sex equals relationship in this story.
But of course.
We then fast forward to them hanging out in the other bar that Meat Locker has. And they're talking about what to do with Carrion and the B-team, as I'm going to call them. Additional characters they had built up for the job. They need to know it's like they need to figure out what they're doing with the rest of their lives now. She takes Carrion's contract and like hands it to Xanthe, and is like, okay, you protect her now. And then like the B team decides to like assemble, and like the zombie and the necromancer decide that like, okay, like, you know, we were friends from back in the day from Ponyville. We're gonna try and find if there's anybody else around that had lived through the bombs, because specifically they want to look for like the person that BJ was impersonating as, because like they have a tip on where she might be. So the B team assembles and they all like decide like, hey, we're gonna go find people, and like I want to come with them. Like,
can we please abandon who we have? Can we just go on adventures with those guys now? Like, can the magic that like sustains BJ just suddenly collapse and now we've shift narrator focus? Can we just do that? Huh?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Aw. Bye. Like, because they sound like they're having a more fun and more like adventurous story. Like, we're gonna go find our friends from the past and see if see if any of them survived and like build up a community of all the old friends. That sounds adorable.
That sounds like a vastly more coherent mission statement than our protagonists have ever had over the course of the entire story. Like, that sounds like an amazing, like, sort of, like, there's an interesting, like, shonen anime there of a Pokemon-esque collection thing. That there have been, like, a dozen sort of anime, like, sort of, like, there's the, like, Cardcaptor Sakura or whatever, of, like, collecting, like, thing a week, except it's old friends. Like, we're zombies in the apocalypse, and we want to see how many of our friends from back in the living days are still hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like an amazing story.
Yes, I want that
story. We really should be focusing on that. Like, we're... No!
Bye! Have fun and having better adventures than we do. Later, guys. But yeah, that clears up a bunch of the other bunch of the characters, and the rest of the regular BJ crew is like, all right, let's mosey then. And as they're about to mosey, as they get into the building proper, they get tackled by like a screaming bat pony, who is yelling at the top of their lungs, because they have some sort of like translation that like they have a translator voice box thing that like modulates their voice from bat squeaks into like actual like parsable language, and she's like yelling about, she's basically talking in ye olde speak, but also calling Blackjack a whore, which is like cool, I guess, whatever. And that like Stygius needs to come.
Why not Slattern or?
Well, like strumpet, like is what I mean, like,
yeah.
But like basically calling her a ye olde whore for like stealing away Stygius and convinced that he's being like having mind controlled or whatever. And it's all really okay. Stupid. They kind of like wrestle for a while because this is Stygius' sister, as we immediately find out.
And they tumble into a mud pit.
And then it starts raining. Then they get cream pies on them. Hate it. But yeah, they start wrestling. The little voice modulator gets knocked off, and Stygius picks it up. And we find out that Stygius also can like speaks in ye olde speak, but he's like talking in a, like a much more reasonable voice. And we find out that like,
oh, I thought we were gonna like do something almost remotely clever and rip off Adventure Time, and that like you pick up the voice modulator and it's the exact same voice.
I wish
set to either Korean or Grandpa.
I wish. I really wish that would have been way cooler. But yeah, he just speaks in like a modulated. Like man voice that's really boring. My immediate thought was just like, oh man, I wish you didn't talk, like, because then I wouldn't have to deal with like fucking somber, stilted dialogue with you. But yeah, we reveal that Stygius was a prince this whole time. And he just goes back to his people, because, like, we'll get into this in a later chapter, but, like, the Bat Ponies are all, like, xenophobic, and they, like, all live in, like, one location that's hidden, and they don't want to, like, interact.
Of course they are! Who isn't? Who besides the zombies of Meat Locker haven't?
Yeah, you got a good point. So, admittedly, if that was, but, like, admittedly, if that was dwelled upon more, that would be more interesting, though, if you think about it. Like, the idea is that, like, in the wasteland, everyone, like, all the ponies have gotten weird and estranged from each other because of all the xenophobia and infighting. But, like, the ones from the past are all just, like, normal because, like, they're more in line with the original show's kind of depictions of ponies, which were just, like, friendly weirdos for the most part. And that could be really fun if that was kind of leaned on, but, like, yeah, all you youngin' kids are all fighting, and we just, like, want to chill and, like, drink radioactive cola. Like, but, yeah, he speaks in yield, he speak, he says he needs to leave, and, of course, Psycho Shy is like, no, take me with you, I need to go with you, because we're now in love with each other, I guess, because they kissed once and fucked once, and there's, like, some disagreement about this, and then Stygius puts his hoof down, and it's like, no, she's coming with me, and so Psycho Shy leaves the story!
Thank God!
She leaves...
I must go now, my boyfriend's
people
planet
need me.
Needs me.
Yeah, yeah, she just, like, a single cell just slides up. Yeah, but not before, like, having a kind of, like, heartful moment, which I would care more if I liked Psycho Shy, but the moment is at least kind of sweet of, like, the, like, you know, like, hey, I hated you at first, but I got to know you, and, like, I want to be called Whisper now, is like a one last shedding of her old life. Which would be, again, would be a moment I cared more if she wasn't a meme. Like, if she wasn't, like, the meme of Yandere Shy, which is the worst meme.
Get fucked, Shy Guy! Go back to Yoshi Island!
Yep. So, her and Stygius depart, so now it's just Blackjack and Rampage and Lacuna. Yay. But Blackjack still needs to get her legs fixed, so we gotta go do that real quick before we head back to Chapel. So they gotta go back to Rover, the Native American diamond dog who repairs her legs in the first place, and go do that. And we get another insufferable moment where they head back to Riverside, which is the town they saved through the power of getting them and the Native Americans to agree to disagree and work with each other. And it's like, and it establishes that, like, oh yeah, Riverside's doing great. Everywhere else is on fire, but, like, because of our unique location, we've been able to salvage all sorts of stuff and make trade with all these other places. Which, like,
if every other place is on fire, then what trade?
Yeah,
trade with who?
With who?
I mean, well, we're back to.
I was gonna say
If everywhere else is on fire and they find out that there's somebody out there with, like, stuff to trade, they would raid them and that place would also be on fire.
This is establishing that shitty, like, thing of, like, trade will save the waste. Because, like,
then why didn't everybody rally to defend the Mega Mart?
Well, that's the thing too, is she also name drops a couple, like, one of the people there, Perch, because all the people in Riverside are named after fish. They established that, like, oh yeah, we've been trading with Megamart and Flank. First of all, Megamart became super totalitarian and is way more paranoid about losing any their position of power.
And Flank has been consumed by Slaanesh cult.
Yeah.
And you blew up their drug factory, which is the main line economic product of the town.
It's like, what? Who in Flank are you trading with? The fucking tweaked out junkies? Or the sex workers that Sombra keeps telling me are evil. But sure, whatever, trade will save the waste. Riverside is doing great. Like, in a dark way, you could almost interpret it that Riverside is prospering specifically because it's the one location Blackjack decided to not, like, scorn with her presence. Because, like... Because Megamart was directly ruined by Blackjack's, like, interference. Because, like, Sanguine came there a-knockin'. And Flank was also equally destroyed by her, like, her presence. So Riverside is the one place.
Again, we're back to like the simultaneously the divine right of kings, and those kings shouldn't do anything.
Yeah, the only
interference in the status quo will only make things worse.
It'll only lead to ruin. But yeah, they go into the metro station that Rover is there, and he's repairing stuff. And Rover continues to be like a character that I'm fascinated by, because he sounds like he's having a he sounds like he's having a whole character arc that we're not privy to, where he's talking about how like he's getting on in years and he wants to like pass down his technological prowess to other Diamond Dogs so that they could like replicate his cybernetics thing, because that way, even if their culture is broken and scattered, they can have something of their culture that gets passed down through tradition. And he's really like really, really strongly believes in that concept, and I think that's a really cool character trait to have, combined with his slowly learning to trust people again is really cool. And Rover is a cool guy that I wish I had more story on. There's also a really bizarre scene where there's a running gag about Blackjack involving a butt plug that I really don't want to repeat. It's just there to gross out the goddess, who's for some reason a prude, even though they're a conglomerate, hive mind, whatever.
All the perverted naughty thoughts are in Lacuna, who and yet doesn't express them because our author keeps forgetting that she's like a dumping ground for all of those feelings, and yet she is also constrained by the rules of the people who benefit from her being the dumping ground.
I love that. I love the idea though that Lacuna is an emotional dumping ground, but also she's folders upon folders that are just not safe for work stuff that's been hidden. How's this chapter still going?
It's a bad story. Yeah, how does it end? How close are we?
We're getting there. We're almost there. We just got two or three more scenes. Whatever.
Two or three more scenes. Let's go.
Blackjack gets her legs fixed. It's a thing. Blackjack back to being regular robot pony. There's a weird conversation with the dealer talking about Celestia because it's setting up stuff for later on, establishing the idea that Celestia was the beloved one of the two princesses, and then Luna was the weirdo that no one really trusted, and the differences in politics. And I could spend a huge amount of time talking about how that's problematic, establishing the idea that there was a rightful, because it's trying to establish the idea that there was a rightful king that is no longer in power.
Yep.
That
divine right.
Yeah, that the reason why the war,
regardless of what she did, she is a bad person. That's a mirror reflection of of Deus and Blackjack and all the others. That for every person that is just innately good, there are people who are just innately bad.
Yeah, and it's establishing that these are the two. BJ has another memory scape where she is in the memories of Golden Blood and Luna having a really, really uncomfortable conversation about politics, and talking about how how Luna being put into power has only made the conflict with the zebras more difficult, because the zebras are highly religious and they believe in the idea that Luna is basically the devil, and that if Celestia had maintained power, it probably wouldn't have gotten so bad. But Celestia stand.
Oh, holy shit!
Yeah.
Now we introduce that on top of you should always, always forgive the divinely elect, you should never ever forgive the genetically inferior.
Yes, you put the wrong person into power, and it establishes the idea that because this is just right around the time that Celestia almost got assassinated, which is the thing that happened, which helped establish the ministries and everything got way worse after that. But Golden Blood is talking about their odds, because Celestia's supposed to be going to because she's since she's stepped down the role of being leader, she's now an ambassador, and she's trying to work out peace negotiations with the zebras, because at this point the zebra conflict has been going on for 10 years and everyone's tired. But Golden Blood just casually nonchalantly says they'll never step down from it. They literally can't, because horribly xenophobic racist bullshit, basically. Our enemies can't step down because they have a religious background.
Their skull shapes are make it impossible.
The zebras want to establish a grand zebra caliphate, and we have to stop them. But he says best case scenario, they kill Celestia, because in the zebra religion, Celestia is like still a sun goddess, and like would be like a huge blow to their like religious excuses for maintaining this war, which is confusing whether or not Golden Blood believes the idea that religious motivation is the reason or a false front. Like, is it a false flag that's being manipulated, like the politicians are manipulating the people with, or not? It doesn't really, like, those are very contrary beliefs to have about the system. But it all just falls away with the idea that they can't trust zebras. Zebras can't be trusted because zebras are stand-ins for Muslims in this story, and Muslims can't be trusted during the, like, Iraqi war. That's basically what's happening right now. Yeah, we're almost done. BJ gets her legs fixed up, has the memory, and then they head back to chapel, and there's kind of like a fun conversation with P21, who's got like a head cold, and Scotch, who's like recovering from her having like, you know, lung surgery, and talking about how like she's like, she's taken to like drawing up architecture schematics because she's like trying to get a cutie mark, and like she wants her cutie mark to be like building related, I guess. But yeah, and the last scene of the chapter is Blackjack finally going back to Star House, their little home. Just meet back up with Glory, who, keep in mind, is still in the body of Rainbow Dash, for extra hilarity in this scene. She does the whole like, oh, like my beloved, I've finally seen you again, and she like turns around and Glory like lifts her up into the air, and then basically power bombs her into the ground because she's mad at her for cheating on her. And it's meant to be like a set, it's meant to be like a big dramatic scene, but it's really hilarious when she like lifts her into the air and then just like hurls her into the ground. And then calls her the C word, you know, Deus's favorite word, because like that just became a thing that everyone says after a certain point, which I really don't agree with as a thing. It really fucks up a lot of character voice. But anyways, that's the end of our chapter. Got any thoughts, closing thoughts before
No, it's horrifying that we've sort of crystallized, like we've finally at this point like figured out through dialectic, through discussing what the sort of like core messages of the entire operation, the entire story turn out to be. The divine right of kings and the unchangeability of the status quo.
The message essentially being that the only good king is a king that doesn't want to be one, which is the end of Game of Thrones too, which is fucking hilarious to think about.
Wonder what Sumber thinks of it. Actually, I don't. I don't. I don't want to hear from. I don't want to. I don't want this man's opinion any more than I.
Than I have than to. That you have to deal with every week. Yeah.
Okay, well,
is there anything?
My email is still the same.
Well,
Weirdington.
I was going to give some. We had any recommendations that we could be reading instead of this, because I certainly have.
Oh,
one.
Right. Okay, yeah. Let's hear. So Fi, what else could we be doing? What else could we be doing right now?
That entirely constructed scenario. I'll let you know. Over the last couple of weeks, some friends have been bullying me into checking out a web series that I thought that they assured me was pretty good, which I can certainly agree with. It's called Epithet Erased. It's like a short, cutesy little web series that's very like it's very anime inspired, if not directly an anime kind of thing.
I've heard so many good things about it that I've been giving serious consideration to giving it another try. Like the pilot episode, I turned off about 2/3 of the way in because the pacing was real, real bad.
Yeah.
Like a lot of like belabored jokes, and like it takes a very long time to get to the point. and it's overall pretty stilted, but it's gone on for a while, and a lot of people whose opinions I respect, including Fi, our co-host, seem to like it. So I've been giving a thought to giving the second episode.
Yeah, I would definitely give it a second episode retry. Its first episode is definitely a lot of like, it's the first episode of a show problems of like. It's very hard to nail your core premise and also make an episode that's worth watching, because you have to like do so much, like there's so much groundwork you have to lay out, especially for something like this, which is essentially a battle anime about like words that give you powers based off of whatever the semantics of that word is, kind of, but not really. Like, I have problems with the way the metaphysics of the show works, but I think that the characters make up a lot for it, and its animation is done in a really weird way. There's a lot of like aspects of it that I just find are really strange, but I still think it's
kind of a stylized, it's a storyboard that's got a little bit more work put on it. Like, yeah, it's more of an animatic than an animation.
It's basically like a visual novel. It's like an animated visual novel in structure, but I'm still having fun with it. Yeah. I enjoyed the first arc that I went through it, and I can recommend it to other people. But Weird, do you have anything that you'd want to recommend?
Our email at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. Email us your thoughts, your praises, your death threats. Like us. Put random comments, even if it's just a series of adhesive. It helps feed the dark gods of the algorithm.
Yeah, because
and drives traffic to us.
Yeah, because it only really checks for reviews. Because like likes, and, like views don't count because it doesn't really have a way of tracking those consistently. So like the only real like metric on which the algorithm can really like push us with is through reviews.
Is comments and stars, comments and thumbs up. So do all that for us. Subscribe. Check out if our Twitters are at Weirdington E for a lot of dank political hot takes and for not safe for work horse crime. There's Thou Art Fi at Thou Art Fi. I can definitely say that I am loins girded, but I can't say that I'm 100% looking forward to the terrible mistake ahead of us.
But I couldn't come home in the dark.